are going deeper and deeper into the Tao. But more importantly, deeper and deeper into the mechanisms that we use to survive and how unnecessary they are. The most difficult aspect of a spiritual practice is to let go. It is to let go of my pride, my vanity, my fears, especially my fears. There is a coldness in people. I see it more and more each day. In my hospice work, in my students, there is a deep and profound coldness. It's a sense of disconnect with their heart, their authentic heart, and their soul. They don't understand the meaning of their life or how their life works. And though I try to teach this to them, they can't make any sense out of it because the life they live is based in the confines of intellectual prowess. It is not based in anything that is truly and authentically going to bring them to their soul. They ride the donkey backwards and blame the donkey for going the wrong way. This is the way we live. It is very difficult. In number two in the Tao, we read this, and I want to really get this across to you in the best way that can possibly be done. But the hard part about it is it depends upon you listening beyond your ears, you seeing beyond your eyes. And if you have not worked on yourself, then this will be more and more difficult to do. This little offering, the stanza, the sutra, is very important. Listen, what is and what is not create each other. Difficult and easy complement each other. Tall and short shape each other. High and low rest on each other. Voice and tone blend with each other. The first and the last follow each other. Now, I know that sounds like a lot of illogic and reasoning, and it is, because life does not work on the Gregory Edwards idea of logic and reasoning. What makes sense to him is not the way. You have to go deeper. I have faced many trials and tribulations in the course of my career, many. And understanding them really helped me to become aware of what it means to have compassion. In our next discourse, I'm going to explain this even further, but for right now, you have to have compassionate ears, compassionate eyes. This is the most important. What is compassion anyway? Is it feeling sorry for someone else's plights, their difficulties? What is compassion? Is it feeling sorry for yourself, for whatever you've done to your life? Is it blame, shame? What is it? As I sit in session work with many, many people during the course of a week, I come to really understand that in consciousness, these people have no sense of compassion. They have no consciousness. They don't live in consciousness. They have no sense of compassion. They misbehave and they do things that seem logical and right to the manner of their desires, their ambitions, and their pride. It is sad but true. Roykin, who was one of my very favorite Zen masters, was a simple man. He lived by the whole premise of simplicity, solitude, and silence. This is the way he lived on the inside. He cultivated many things within him that allowed him to have a sense of compassion. This compassion came forth through consciousness. And consciousness also came forth as the ability to have the willingness to see how things work. In true compassion, I see the mechanism not only of the human of me, but I also see the bigger picture, the bigger workings, the throbbing love, kindness, the mercy that is shown to all of us. Roykin was childlike. I love him very much because he was not childish, he was childlike. You remember what Jesus said, "Whosoever exalts himself shall be abased, and he who humbles himself shall be exalted." What is this exalted? It means to be bestowed upon one a higher sense of consciousness. I can guarantee you that the reason these discourses, even your own life, don't mean very much to you is because the lack of consciousness, the hardness of heart that we have all lived with in order to survive. And now I am asking you to question survival. What good does it do to survive when it's only about the flesh, keeping what they say, body and soul together? Soul has no means for all of this, but we like to use that term. When I am in a state of consciousness, when I am willing of consciousness, through the practice of allowing myself to align me with the tones of awakening that live inside me as well as all around me, instead of being hard of heart, logical in my ruthlessness, I live in the beauty of simplicity. Consciousness is simplicity. Consciousness leads to compassion. The ability to see what's really going on behind the scenes of my beliefs, my misunderstandings, my precepts, my concepts. I want you to sit with me really quietly right now. Can you hear what's beyond my voice? Can you realize what is happening beyond your thinking about my voice? Can you let the words reveal to you something beyond the misunderstanding of words? Can you give up your precepts, your concepts, your necessities? What is the necessity that you covet inside of yourself that is so deeply important to you. How do you look at this life? And what is the necessity for you to live? And where does it come from? It comes from the whole effort of your genetics, your DNA. Remember, the things that are most prevalent to those who are cruel and unaware is they live in the absolute desperateness of their body. The body knows what is going on. It knows it's dying. It knows it's dwindling. And when my genetics are added to all this and I'm starting to fall from my genetics, I take a turn. I have watched this in people. They turn. People without compassion, without practicing any sense of consciousness, they make a turn, and the turn is down. Down into their biology, down into their traits, down into their basic evil. The human body can only do so much. And then it can't do any more. It can provide you a space for living in this world, but it is not there to give you answers to itself because it is the problem of the self. Our genetics, well, they determine where our focus is going to be. The only way in which we can live is through our genetic heritage, if we live by the body. When you find people who have come into this world, the avatars that have come to help us, and there have been many, they don't live by their gender. They don't live by the basic structure of their genetic dispositions. They have compassion. This compassion is inexplicable. It's something you come to know. It's something you realize you are. It has nothing to do with what my genetics are dictating to me. Do you remember the story of Roykin? He was invited to his brother's house. His nephew was misbehaving, and the parents, knowing Roykin's saintly qualities and his beautiful rapport with children, his brother invited him for a dinner. The sole purpose of the dinner was to encourage his nephew to get over whatever was troubling him. That's the way we are, just get over it. The brother had hoped that Roykin would talk with the boy, straighten him out, fix him. Roykin came and had dinner and didn't say a word to the boy. He went to bed that night and still hadn't said a word. The brother and his wife were wondering whether Roykin was going to say anything to their son to straighten him out. When it was time for Roykin to leave, the boy, acting in accord with customs in Japan at that time, knelt down and tied the shoes of his uncle. And then, as he was doing so, he felt something warm and wet on his neck. When he lifted his head up, he saw tears falling from the eyes of his uncle. Not a word was spoken. From then on, the boy changed. There didn't need to be words. Compassion is wordless. The compassion in this nephew was awakened by the gentleness, the persistence, the compassion of Roykin. Now, would this work in every given situation? Probably not. The world has gone way overboard. It would be very difficult to even consider the idea of just allowing compassion to enter in. But let it enter into you. I sit with a lot of different kinds of people in my session work. Some of them understand what I'm trying to show them, others reject it. They're so absorbed with themselves, they can't see what is really going on. And when they do, they can only condemn themselves and feel guilty and ashamed. But those words never come through my mouth. I understand. Compassion is the understanding that exceeds logic and reasoning, that exceeds excuses. In compassion, we are prayerful. We are mindful. We live in a kindness that is not ruthless, but is situational. Roykin knew his situation with his nephew and knew his words were never going to help. He had that compassion. I had recently a session with a student who was particularly troubled. And this student went on and on and on, and I said not a word. I just looked at the student. Finally, the student looked at me and said, "Aren't you going to say anything?" And I said, "I have been all throughout this session. Why can't you hear me?" The student just looked down and said, "I was ashamed." There's no need to be ashamed. The only need there needs be is to listen. Compassion allows you to listen to that still small voice within you. And instead of making a problem within yourself, you let love live you. Even the word love, you have to have a great deal of compassion for it. It is a very powerful word, love. But without a sense of compassion, it means absolutely nothing to the average person. It's just a romantic thing or a personal thing. It is not a loving thing at all. And everything is missed. The whole life is missed. To sit in compassion, to see how things work and understand with a ton of patience, persistence. Two things, patience and persistence, they win out. And in the next discourse, I'll explain that which is and that which ain't. A series I did many, many years ago on TV. And it's an important series. But for right now, here's what I'd like to do with our meditation. If you can get quiet enough, if you can be still, ask for the understanding you cannot accept. the understanding that would bring you to the simplicity of compassion. Ask, help me understand beyond my intellect, beyond my mind. Bring me that which is from that which is not.